Marcopreneur, episode number 53, Tales of a Teenage Entrepreneur. This one's gonna get me into trouble.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, a free market squad and the place to be? Welcome to another exciting episode of Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. I am your host with the hero complex, the high priest of propaganda, Nathan Fraser. This is the only podcast in the world dedicated to self-ownership and business ownership in that order. You, more importantly than all of that, though, you are the Free Market Squad. Thank you for taking an hour out of your day to hang with me, Free Market Squad. I do appreciate it. Today, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things, but all around a central focus. I don't know, I might entitle this episode Tales of a Teenage Entrepreneur. I'm not sure, though, because what I want to go with is probably going to get flagged by Facebook. But today's episode is going to be controversial, to say the least. So to start off, I'm going to start talking about why I'm against prohibition, and that's going to ruffle some feathers. That's okay. Also, I'm going to give a quick update on some of the stuff going on in my life, not really related to the main topic of today's show. And then I'm going to go into the meat and potatoes of this week's episode, which is lessons that I learned about business while being a drug dealer. I told you this is going to be a controversial one. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. Here we go. I went from rapping about chemtrails and get more bay to rapping about how business owners can get more pay. Before these status fools, we need tools to defeat them. Free FM, focus on freedom. All right, let's just go ahead and jump right into it. And this week's focus on freedom is all about drug prohibition. It may not be the most popular opinion that I'm about to share. I know that I have a lot of business owners in my audience who might not feel the same way, but that's okay. I'm going to strongly, in my opinion, I'm going to make a strong case for why prohibition of drugs, really anything, but specifically we're going to be talking about drugs, why I think that prohibition of drugs is just ridiculous and why we should end it. We should end it today. We should have ended it yesterday. So, without any further ado, I'm going to jump into the top 10 reasons why I believe we should end drug prohibition. Starting with number one, and this is probably the most obvious one, drug prohibition doesn't work. We've been fighting the war on drugs for 40 plus years now, and drug usage it's not gone down. We haven't seen a decrease in drug usage. We haven't seen a decrease in drug abuse. We haven't seen a decrease in drug fatalities. It's not working. We've been waging this uber expensive war on drugs, and for the people in my audience that lean to the right and say we should have a smaller government, the war on drugs is a huge expansion of government power, and it doesn't work. And realistically, prohibition in general doesn't work. Look at gun control. Look at the cities where guns are prohibited the most strictly in the United States also have the highest occurrences of gun violence. Cities like Washington, D.C., Chicago, Los Angeles, all of these cities have very strict gun control, with D.C. kind of like in a gray area right now. But these cities that have the most amount of gun control also seem to have the most amount of gun violence because prohibition doesn't work. Another example of this is the 1920s prohibition on alcohol. They made alcohol illegal, and did that stop people from drinking? No, it just created a whole industry of bootlegging and speakeasies, and people didn't stop drinking. Another example of this is prison, where the government's pretty much has more control than any other aspect of life. Prison, where drugs are strictly prohibited, where weapons are strictly prohibited. There's still a lot of drugs and weapons inside of prison. So for that reason, number one, prohibition just doesn't work. So why keep pouring money into something that's not working? Reason number two why I'm against prohibition is it only makes prohibited items more profitable to sell. Drug prohibition just makes drugs more profitable. It makes selling them more lucrative. When you decrease the supply of something without decreasing the demand of something, all you're going to do is increase the amount of profit somebody can make off of selling that prohibited substance. It's basic supply and demand economics. So when they say something's illegal, it doesn't mean that it just disappears. It just means the people providing it, the people that are willing to go out there and get it and secure it and transport it and bring it to the people that are willing to buy it, are just going to have a giant spike in the amount of profit that they're able to make off of it. So all it does is make it more lucrative to certain types of salespeople. Notice how I named drug dealers salespeople. Reason number three why I'm against prohibiting drugs, prohibition in general, is prohibited substances are more alluring to rebellious teenagers. And I say this because as a rebellious teenager, anytime somebody would tell me, hey, you're not allowed to do that, or hey, you better not do that, the first thing that I did was ask myself, hey, I wonder how I can do that. And when people said, don't do this particular substance, you're not 21 yet, so you're not allowed to drink. Okay, well, I'm going to go get drunk then and see what the big deal is about this. You're not allowed to smoke marijuana because it'll destroy your da-da-da. I mean, and this ranges a whole gambit. As a rebellious teenager, it wasn't just drugs that were alluring to me because authority figures told me I couldn't do it. Lots of things that I did as a teenager that common sense would tell me not to do now, just because authority figures told me I couldn't do it, they were more attractive to me. And so just because of that, just because I know myself as a rebellious teenager, I did things that were against my own self-interest purely because it was a way for me to act against authority figures. It was a way for me to express my individuality, and it was a way for me to stick it to the man. And so I did a lot of things that were harmful to myself merely because authority figures told me that I shouldn't or I couldn't. And one thing that kind of goes along with this is here in Colorado, now that we've legalized marijuana, marijuana usage amongst teenagers has declined rapidly in the last couple of years since we decriminalized it. And I want to say Portugal, one of the countries just recently celebrated its a decade since it ended their war on drugs. And the same thing has happened there. They just ended the entire war on drugs, and drug usage, drug addiction countrywide has plummeted by like over 80%. So prohibited substances are more attractive to the rebellious nature of human beings. And so by prohibiting something, all you do is make it alluring to kind of like the reptilian part of our brain that wants to express our individuality. So for that reason, I'm against prohibition. Reason number four why I am against prohibition is that it attracts a criminal element to that particular industry. Whatever industry it is that we prohibit, say it's cocaine. Cocaine used to be legal to sell. You used to be able to go up to your pharmacy and get it. You knew what was in whatever you were buying. You trusted the guy that was selling it to you. And he was a friendly drugstore clerk or a friendly Coca-Cola salesman. Look it up. And then they made it illegal. and now you have to buy your coke from a gangbanger, or you have to buy your cocaine from organized crime. I guess you don't have to buy your cocaine. I mean, you could be like me and not buy cocaine. And maybe I should preface this. Maybe I should have mentioned this at the beginning. I don't use drugs. I mean, I drink coffee and occasionally pop an aspirin. Maybe two or three times a week, I smoke a bowl of some marijuana, or cannabis, as the uppity, don't call it marijuana, man. People here in Colorado like to say, it's cannabis, it's a medicine. Anyways, I don't do the majority of drugs that I did as a teenager, but I'm not for criminalizing them. And any of the quote-unquote drugs that I do right now are all legal. I don't even really drink. I drink maybe three or four beers a year. But I'm not for – and alcohol actually is what killed my brother. My brother died at 29 years old from drinking himself to death. And I still wouldn't dream of criminalizing alcohol, making it illegal for people to drink, because it just goes against – but anyways, back to number four. When you take something out of the white markets and put it into the gray or the black markets, you attract a different type of salesperson to it. So no longer are you buying from a friendly drugstore clerk, you're buying from a gangbanger, you're buying from organized crime. Because if something is illegal, the people that procure that something and sell that something are going to be people who don't have a problem with breaking laws, which means now when you go to buy something, you're buying it from people who might kill you, might rob you, might do all kinds of different stuff because they're shadier people, because government has made it illegal to buy the same substance from people who aren't shady. So number four, making something prohibited doesn't stop the sales of it. It just changes who is selling it to a more seedy, more crime-infested section of society. Reason number five why I'm against prohibition is it drives the creation of more dangerous alternatives. So people are like, oh, alcohol's dangerous, let's make it illegal. Well, what did that result in? It resulted in there's something called the iron law of prohibition, which is basically, it says whatever you make illegal, people are just going to find ways to make it more dangerous than it was before it was illegal. So with alcohol, they're bootlegging and they're running alcohol back and forth, and they've got a truck that can hold so much volume of liquid. They can carry 32 gallons. And so they could just ship regular 3-2 beer in those 32 gallons, and they can get so much money for that. Or they can ship hard liquor in those 32 gallons, or they can take wine and they can condense it down to like a syrupy process and ship 10 times as much hard alcohol in those 32 gallons. And then once they get it to the speakeasies can add water to it and water it down and bring it back to its natural alcohol potency. Or they can just sell it as a harder, more hardcore liquor. The point is, though, because it was illegal, because they had to figure out how to maximize their profit based off of the exact same truck that they were moving legal alcohol with, you know, 2 weeks before, now all of a sudden they have to figure out a way to increase the alcohol per ounce or per gallon by volume, and you get more intense, stronger alcohol. Same thing with, like, crack. When cocaine became illegal, people said, well, if we're going to be busted for selling cocaine and we're going to have, you know, I've got pockets that can fit this much cocaine. Oh, what if we rock it up and we make crack? Now I can fit twice as much profit in my pocket or in my sock than I could as just selling cocaine. So now all of a sudden selling crack is more lucrative than selling cocaine. Same thing with like a crocodile. I don't know if you've heard of crocodile. Look it up. It's horrifying. In areas, I want to say in Russia, where heroin has become incredibly hard to get because of the war on drugs, but it hasn't stopped heroin addiction. So heroin addicts have started shooting up something that's like a heroin alternative called crocodile. It's like bathtub heroin. But the problem is this stuff rots your body from the inside. People's limbs are falling off. Giant chunks of their muscle tissue is falling off. And it's all because they killed the supply without killing the demand. And instead of making heroin less dangerous, they've made heroin addiction more dangerous. Fake weed in areas where weed's still illegal. They sell things like K2 and spice and all these different weed alternatives that are sending kids to the hospital because it's this manufactured marijuana that has all kinds of chemicals sprayed on it, and it's more dangerous than regular weed. 3D printed guns. You outlaw guns, people can 3D print guns. They can download schematics to make their own gun off of Pirate Bay. And now, instead of having a gun that's been tested by a trusted manufacturer, you've got some gun that you just printed off the internet. And that's definitely not as safe for anybody as letting guns be distributed by trusted, reputable gun manufacturers. Prostitution, same thing. You got streetwalkers where prostitution's illegal. And then you've got high-class escort services or things like the Bunny Ranch where prostitution is legal. And where it's illegal, the streetwalkers, they don't get drug tested. They don't get tested for diseases. And so your chance of getting sick from having sex with a streetwalking prostitute is greatly increased from your chances of getting sick from meeting and sleeping with a prostitute in something like the Bunny Ranch in Las Vegas. So making prostitution prohibited makes it doesn't get rid of prostitution. It just makes it a lot more dangerous. And there's no recourse if you get if you buy some bad crack or you buy some bad heroin. There's no recourse for it because you can't go to the cops and be like, I bought this bad heroin. You can't go to the cops and be like, yeah, I slept with this prostitute and now I've got this rash. You need to go do something about it because you've admitted to doing a crime. So there's no recourse for a bad product when something's become illegal or become prohibited. And there's no consumer reports. There's nobody adding a check and balance to these different prohibited substances because it's illegal to test and it's illegal to write reviews about these things. And so all around, prohibition makes dangerous substances more dangerous. Number six, prohibition breaks up poor families. Specifically, it goes after poor families. It puts dads in prisons. It puts moms on welfare. And it leaves little kids being raised up by the state. And me, I'm not going to get into my opinions about the nuclear family, but having dad in prison, having mom on welfare, and having the kids being raised up dependent on the state, I don't think it's the ideal situation. I don't think that it brings about thriving, strong communities. And I think that cities like Detroit, Los Angeles, a lot of the cities that I grew up in, and again, I grew up in one of these families. I grew up in a family where my dad was in and out of prison. I grew up in a family where my mom was on welfare. I grew up in these communities. So I'm not pointing my finger at something I've never experienced. I'm telling you, growing up in it, growing up as a victim of the war on drugs, and growing up in a broken family that a lot of it had to do with drug prohibition, not a fan. Number seven, police militarization. I kind of touched on this earlier. But especially if you're a conservative, which conservatives are the ones that back the war on drugs the most, this is a giant overreach of the powers of government. This is turning our police units into standing armies. It should be horrifying to conservatives, but for some reason it's not. I don't know. SWAT teams are constantly hitting the wrong houses, doing no-knock raids on the wrong addresses, killing innocent people, throwing flashbang grenades into children's cribs and permanently damaging children. And here's the scariest thing. You can say, oh, yeah, but it's for the war on drugs. They're only going after those people. They're only going after the others, those people over there. Okay, but what about when guns become illegal? And those same police who have trained on the drug dealers and the crack houses now have all of that equipment that you allowed them to acquire under the guise of the war on drugs. And now, and they have all that training on how to bust into people's houses and take down people who own firearms, because drug dealers usually own firearms. And now they're coming after you. That same force that you justified is now going to be used against you. It's better to nip it in the bud at the beginning and be consistent with your values and say, hey, militarizing the police is not a good idea, even if it's to do something that I agree with, like fighting the war on drugs, which, again, I don't agree with it, but I'm just playing the role of conservative right now. Number 8, asset forfeiture laws. This is one of the things that infuriates me the most. People just losing all kinds of property, cars, money, cash, houses, just because of these asset forfeiture laws. I saw a story a few years back about a lady who lost her car because her husband was soliciting a prostitute. The car was in her name. It was the vehicle she used to get back and forth to work with. Her husband was using the car. He went and tried to pick up a prostitute, ended up being a sting. The police stole her car. She took it all the way to the Supreme Court trying to get her car back. And didn't. The police kept her car and auctioned it off and kept the money from it, even though it wasn't his car. Also, there's been stories of where drugs are flowing into a town. Drug dealers are coming from across state borders or across United States borders into towns like in Arizona. And they know that on one side of the highway, the drugs are coming in. On one side of the highway, the money's going out. And they're not stopping anybody coming into town with the drugs, but they're stopping people leaving town because they know the people will have money in the car. They're pulling people over. They're confiscating the money. So they're not keeping the society safe by stopping the flow of drugs in, but they're definitely catching the drug dealers on the way out so they can confiscate all of that money. And it's all about asset forfeiture, and it's not about keeping the community safe. So number 8, asset forfeiture laws are a huge reason why I'm against prohibition and the war on drugs. Reason number 9, the war on drugs is mainly directed at peaceful people, people who want to get high, who aren't hurting anybody. Sometimes they're crackheads still in VCRs, but the overwhelming majority of people that are affected by the war on drugs are marijuana users. And those people go to work. They don't hurt anybody. They're not violent criminals, but they like to smoke a little bit of pot and get high. And that's the overwhelming majority of people that go to prison for the war on drugs. They're peaceful people. They get caught up in the court system. They go to prison. They go to an environment where they always have to be watching their back, where there's rapists, where there's beatings, where there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. You always got to be on flight or fight mode. And when they come out of their prison sentences, they're no longer the peaceful people they were when they went in. And if they return to prison, 9 times out of 10, when a peaceful offender goes back to prison for a second time, it's not for a peaceful crime. It's for a violent crime. So the war on drugs is taking peaceful people and turning them into violent people. It's not making society safer. Do you get that? I'm sure you probably do, but at least by now, I hope you do. And number 10, one of the last reasons, obviously not the last, but the last for this 10-point explanation, number 10, number 10 reason why I'm against prohibition. It assumes that you have the right to make a choice for your neighbors, but you don't have a right to make that same choice for yourself. You're not allowed to choose what you can put into your own body, but you are allowed to choose what your neighbors can put into their bodies. You don't own yourself, but you do own your neighbors. You don't have the right to choose for yourself, yet somehow you do have the right to make that same exact choice for your neighbors. So it's completely inconsistent. The reality of the situation is you do own yourself. You do have the right to make those decisions for yourself. You do not own your neighbors. You do not own other people. You do not have the right to make those decisions for other people. But the war on drugs completely takes that logic, flips it all the way around and gives you a right over other people that you don't even have over yourself, and gives a right to other people over you that they don't even have a right to exercise for themselves. Completely logically inconsistent. So those are my top 10 reasons why I'm against prohibition. I'm not a guru, I'm not an activist, I'm just an entrepreneur and an anarchist, trying to be a leader and deal with haters, man. This is my life, welcome to Nathan Fraser Land. All right, so let's take a break from the hard teaching for a moment and just catch up with what's been going on in my own personal life over the last couple of, seems like a while since I've done Nathan Fraser Land, where I was out sick for a couple of weeks, and I was running some repurposed material from other episodes that I had been on other people's podcasts. We had an interview with Daisy Luther last week. That was an awesome interview. I totally recommend going and checking that out if you haven't already listened to it. And I've really only done one actual episode of this show where I just kind of rocked the mic solo. Only one in like over a month now. So it's good to be back. Thank you for sticking around. Downloads are actually up, which is maybe an indication that you guys don't like hearing me talk so much. I don't know. How could that possibly be? Anyways, I do have a lot of exciting news coming up, both for Podcast Blast Off, for me, Nathan Fraser Land, NathanFraserShow.com, sorry about that, and for the Free Market Squad. I want to tell you all about it, but it looks like we're coming up on a break, so yep, there's the bumper music. I'm going to have to tell you about it on the other side of the break. We'll get into Nathan Fraser Land. Wow, maybe I should have waited until the other side of the break to play the Nathan Fraser Land bumper music. Ah, well, it is what it is. Stick around. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. We'll be right back.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Okay, so having a podcast is kind of like having a therapy or a therapist that doesn't charge you an arm and a leg. You can tell from this particular episode, I get a rant on things that I just want to get off of my chest. And I actually get to put it out there to people who actually want to listen to it and don't have to pay them $100 an hour to hear me out. In fact, I get people that pay me because they want to hear the stuff that I like to rant about. So podcasting is a great form of therapy. I thoroughly enjoy it. My life has been changed by being able to have a podcast. The people I've been able to meet, the connections I've been able to make, the businesses that I've been able to build, and just the sanity retention aspect of being able to just get in front of the microphone, rant, and know that I'm able to connect with people that feel the same way. It's a great thing. I love having a podcast. Even if when I switched over and started doing the Nathan Fraser Show as opposed to Live Free FM, I saw a huge dip in the amount of listeners. I went from getting that like 3,000 downloads an episode to getting less than 100 downloads an episode. It hurt, but I kept going because I love podcasting. It's something that just, I don't know, man. I just love it. It's something that makes me feel whole. It's something that makes me feel refreshed. It's something that makes me feel, it feels therapeutic. And I love doing it. So I'm not going to quit podcasting anytime soon. If you're listening to this and you're thinking that you would like to start a podcast, you would like to get those therapeutic benefits that I just mentioned, you would like to meet and connect with people who are of like mind, you'd like to build your tribe, you'd like to be able to rant and just have people who enjoy hearing your rants actually download and encourage you to do so, a podcast is a great way to do it. And I would love to help you get your podcast out there. So if you've been thinking about starting a podcast and you just don't know all the technical stuff as far as hosting a podcast, getting a website up, getting on iTunes, I can make all of that super easy for you. I want to make all of that super easy for you. I want you to be able to get your message out there, and I want to help you get your message out there. And you want more information on how I can help you do that, you need to go check out podcastblastoff.com. That is my website. Tons of tips and tutorials on how to podcast, how to get the best sounding podcast, how to maximize your ability to launch your podcast, maximize your audience. Also, we offer hosting and website development for podcasters. So the whole array, everything that you need to know to get started, everything that you need technically to get your podcast out there, it's all available over at podcastblastoff.com. Go and check it out today.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back, Free Market Squad in the place to be. Thank you for taking an hour out of your day to hang with me. I do appreciate it. I am your host with the Hero Complex, the High Priest of Propaganda over at the Church of the Invisible Hand. My name is Nathan Frazier. This is the Nathan Frazier Show. We are being broadcast on Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM, and a bunch of micro broadcasters all throughout the United States. Much love. Thank you for that. If you want to check out more of this great unprogramming, you can check it out over at NathanFrazierShow.com. That's where you can find episodes, official episodes of this here podcast, Nathan Frazier Show, Anarchopreneur. We are the number one podcast dedicated to self-ownership and business ownership. That's what I'm all about. And let's just real quickly, before we jump back into the show, I want to finish up with some news about Nathan Frazier Land, some stuff that's going on. So first of all, I did run a webinar late last month, and I got kind of, maybe not a surprising result, but kind of a surprising result. So I'm going to talk about this for a second and just give my thoughts on what this implies. So I used to do a lot of legal stuff back when I did Live Free FM and Sovereignty Sundays. The majority of what I was doing back at that time was legal stuff. I would go into the courtrooms. I would practice different sovereignty gurus techniques. I would see what was working, what wasn't working, and then I would report back to you, the listener, what my experiences were. And I think there's two guys that I really would say were the most rock solid guys that I found their material to actually work. And then the whole rest of that community seemed to be a bunch of bullshit artists. And so the two guys that I found the most success using their methods were Mark Stevens and a cat on YouTube called Tactical Guy One. And Tactical Guy One, he got a lot of his stuff from Charlie Sprinkle. So I guess I should say three guys, because Charlie Sprinkle had a lot of really good information as well. But here's what I learned. When I was going through that, and when I was documenting what I was doing in the courtrooms, and when I was showing people the success that I was having and the success that other people were having, and the unsuccessful ventures, the things where it didn't go the way we wanted, but we got some really condemning, damning admissions from judges and prosecutors. When I was going through and laying out why it works, I wrote a whole book on the way I saw the legal system from an anarchist voluntarist point of view, and understanding that way of looking at things, why I asked the questions that I was asking, why I put in the motions that I put in, and why, in my opinion, I was getting the results, which were usually cases dismissed, why we were, and not just for myself, for people that were ballsy enough to go in there and try and imitate what I was doing in the courtrooms, why we were getting these results. And I had something that came up over and over and over again. And that was that when I would lay this out, I made the book available for free so anybody could get it and download it and look at it. I made all of the motions I was using available for free so people can look at them, template them, use them themselves if they felt, you know, if they felt that that was what they wanted to do. I did hours and hours and hours of podcast episodes explaining how it worked, why I thought it worked, you know, the underlying knowledge of why it should work and why it was working. Just gave tons of and did phone calls with people, gave free consultations to people, did tons of work just laying out all of this information of how you could do it yourself. And I still, the number one thing that I got from people was, well, can you go in there and do it for me? Can you represent me? Can you go and talk? I understand not wanting to walk into a dark room without any lights on and not knowing where the Legos are on the floor and not knowing what couch is where and not wanting to stub your toe. And that's kind of what going into court for the first time feels like. I understand not wanting to walk into a dark room, but what I was doing was the equivalent of giving people a layout, showing them this is where the Legos are at, this is where the couch is at, this is where the light switch is at. All you have to do is reach to the left and turn on the light switch, and you can walk the entire room in the light. You can see everything. And they still would say, well, can you hold my hand? And you might sense a little bit of frustration in my voice, but this is something that I've also learned in marketing. So I've been able to build up a successful, I mean, I'm not retired off of it yet, but Podcast Blast Off is now turning more of a profit each month than it's taking to sustain itself. I have two records, two CDs out of the four CDs that me and my brother recorded back in the day. I'm still collecting passive income off of those two CDs, so I still get paid off of those every month. I've been able to create three or four different streams of passive income where I really don't have to do very much work, and I just get free money each month. And most of it has come from learning how to set up sustainable structures in business and learning how to market. And I've been teaching people this stuff through this podcast. I just had a webinar two weeks ago, where I went through and laid out, this is the things you need to do. And the number one response that I got back from people that hit me up after the webinar was, can you help me do it? I laid out all the stuff that people need to do, and I still get people saying, can you help me do it? Or can you do it for me? And I actually just took on a job that's going to pay a significant amount of money. Again, I always get iffy about talking about money on the air, but I just took on a job from somebody that took the webinar, went through it and said, hey, we've got this product. We're trying to sell it. It's a proven product. Can you set up a system just like you went? And I laid out everything you have to do, and still the response I get is, can you do it for us? And that's something that is very telling, because people are so secretive with their methods. People are so, once they figure something out, they don't want to let other people know how they did it because they're afraid that other people are going to copy them. And this idea of IP, everybody's so concerned about their ideas, and they got to patent their ideas so nobody else can copy them. And what I've kind of realized, and I'm going to contradict that IP statement here in a bit on the episode, just a fair warning, but what I've kind of realized is you can give away all your best ideas. You can say, this is how I did it. This is step by step, everything that I did to get to where I'm at now. And 1 out of 10 people will take that, and they'll be able to duplicate it. They'll be able to say, okay, I got that. That makes perfect sense. I'm going to start trying to do it. But 9 out of 10 people will say, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Can you do it for me? And so by giving away all the things that I've learned, just by doing these podcast episodes, by doing these webinars, by giving away the PDFs that I give away, by the things that I do for blog posts and all of the content that I create, and I'm just giving away all this information, and people are like, well, aren't you afraid if you just give this information away, there'll be no need for you? What I've found is the exact opposite. By giving away all of my secrets that I've used to be able to build the businesses that I've built has actually created more of a need for me. It's actually created more people coming to me and saying, hey, can I pay you to do it for me? So just a kind of a strange thing, a huge side tangent, but giving away stuff, ideas are not worth anything. Execution of those ideas is where everything's at. And by giving away your best ideas, it seems like, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems like for every one person that takes it and does something with it and succeeds, there's four people who just take it and don't have it, don't place any value in it and don't do anything with it. And then there's five people out of those 10 people that will come back to you and say, hey, can I pay you to do this for me? So something to think about. It's something that I experienced when I was doing the legal stuff. It's something that I've experienced as a podcaster with people coming to me and saying, hey, that's great that you explained how to do all this. Can I just come over to your crib and we can record it at your studio? I get to make more money that way. That's fine with me. And it's something that I've been experiencing recently as somebody who's a business owner and somebody who's doing different marketing techniques in my business, is now I'm having people come to me and saying, that's great that you gave that information away for free. Can I pay you to come to my business and do the exact same thing? And it's actually bringing me more business by giving this information away, which is kind of paradoxical. I don't know. Anyways, enough of that. Some other things real quick I want to hit. I want to make a couple points real quick. I first of all want to say a huge thank you to one of the listeners, Chris Jansen, of Starting From Scratch podcast and from Grin Again Goods, sent me a book this last week. I got it in the mail. Joe Sugarman, who's like hands down one of the greatest copywriters of all time, one of his most widely acclaimed books, The Adweek Copywriting Handbook, showed up in my mail last week, and it was from Chris. He found it on my Amazon wish list and sent it to me. So much love. Many thanks, Chris. I really appreciate it. You're the man. And I just wanted to give you a huge thank you on air to let you know how much I appreciated that. With that, I just want to jump right into this last little bit of this week's show, which is the BYO Boss Church of the Invisible Hand segment. So without any further ado, let's get into that. For my Free Market Squad members out on the grind, you gotta be your own boss, can't just fall into line. You gotta have a free mind and hope for the future. You gotta be the free market anarchopreneur. All right, so I'm gonna start off this part of the show with a preface, a little disclaimer. I do not sell drugs. I do not recommend selling drugs. That is not the point of this. But I got to be real with you. My first business, the way I got into entrepreneurialism was by being a drug dealer. We were poor. By 13, I was working at the carnivals. Saw a lot of drug dealing going on there. By 14, I was working in a steam laundry and with a bunch of Mexicans, saw a lot of cocaine flowing around. And realized, there's a lot easier way to make money than doing this grinding, crazy work that I do not enjoy doing. And I started looking into starting my own business and tried to walk the path of people like Scarface and started buying drugs and selling them. Again, not advocating it. But I am going to talk about some of the lessons that I learned about business while I was dealing drugs and how those lessons still ring true today. So with that little preface out of the way, let's go ahead and jump into the top 10 lessons that I learned as a drug dealer that have made me a better businessman. So first of all, number one, be very careful who you trust. I have been in the drug game. I was ripped off multiple times by people who I ignorantly gave my trust to, including family members. One time I gave my cousin a bunch of money to go pick something up for me, and he came back and didn't have the money, didn't have the product, and came up with a bull crap story about how he had lost it. And I trusted him. And then it happened again, like a month and a half later, it happened again. And this time with thousands of dollars that weren't just my money, were other people's money as well. And that got me into a huge heap of trouble. So in any kind of business, especially if there's a lot of money going around, be very careful who you trust. Only trust people who have proven that you can trust them. And, Just because somebody's family doesn't mean that you can trust them in your business. Rule number two, only sell to a hungry market. So I wrote an email about this, and I'm just going to lay it out on the show. Back in the early 2000s, late 90s, around that time, me and my brother were going to raves, and we were selling ecstasy, and we were getting boats of it floated to us, which meant thousands of pills, and we were paying like 25 cents a pill and turning around and selling them for like $20, so a huge markup. And we would hit the different raves, and we would go in with a backpack full of pills and come out with a backpack full of money. And it was nice. It was a very lucrative business to be in. But one night we heard about a party that was in town. We were typically driving all the way out to the mountains. It was kind of a pain in the butt. It was scary driving all that way, driving through three or four different cities to get to a party. There was a lot of risk involved, and the money was good, but we were lazy. I mean, but just to be real about it. And we heard one night that there was going to be a party in town. There was a party way outside of town. And then there was also a party that we heard rumors about inside of town in the warehouse district of Fort Collins, where we lived at. And we said, you know what? Let's not drive all the way outside of town. Let's drive to this other party. Well, we get to this party, and instead of glow sticks and bass cannons and a DJ and lasers flickering, it's a hardcore straight edge punk party, and there's punk bands playing, and all of the kids are straight edge kids, or the majority of the kids there are straight edge kids, which means they don't drink, they don't do drugs, they don't smoke pot, they don't do really anything that's not healthy for their body. And so we're in a crowd full of these straight edge kids with two backpacks full of pills, and we can't sell them to anybody. So lesson number two is, Don't try and sell hamburgers to vegans. Don't try and sell food to a market that's not hungry. If you got something to sell, don't try and sell it to people who aren't hungry for it. Go to where the people are hungry. Sell to a hungry market. Lesson number three, free samples work. Now, you see this in the supermarket. They give out free samples for stuff all the time. You see it in the old 1980s anti-marijuana commercials where drug dealers are handing out joints. That's not quite as realistic as what it is. But as a drug dealer, I do know that by letting people have a free sample, here, take a couple hits of this, let me know what you think, come back next week, I'll still have some. Free samples work. You let people, it's just like that thing about what I mentioned earlier about people not trusting walking into a room that's dark. If you give them a little bit of a sample, all of a sudden that turns the light on for them. They know what they're buying, and they're more than happy to come back and buy again. So free samples work. If you've got a way to give a free trial membership to whatever you're selling, or if you got a way to give out a free sample of whatever it is you're selling, samples work. Number four, niche down and dominate one market. Now, this is so hard in the business world. People want to be over here and be over there. And I struggle with this myself, being that I am really good at graphic design, being that I'm really good at copywriting, being that I'm really good at web development. And I'm like, oh, I can do this to make money, and I can do this to make money. But I found that when I do niche down and I say, this is the one thing that I'm going to focus on, and I'm going to ignore these other things, I'm able to go a mile deep and an inch wide and make a huge impact rather than going a mile wide and only one inch deep. So same thing in drug dealing. If you're constantly selling different things, if I came up to you and I bought weed from you last week and I go to buy weed from you again this week and all you have is cocaine, well, next time I need some weed, I'm going to say, well, sometimes he has weed, sometimes he has cocaine. I'm not really into cocaine, so I'm going to call this other guy first. So niche down into one market, dominate that market, and don't try and sell cocaine if you're known for selling weed. That's the lesson there, folks. I told you, these are going to be very controversial lessons for this week, but that's okay. Lesson number five that I learned from selling drugs that worked its way over into the way I look at business is pick your clientele wisely. Now, I sold I feel like I'm going to get locked up after doing this episode. I have a buddy who sold methamphetamine for a while, and that sucked because you got crackheads calling you at 2 o'clock or meth addicts calling you at 2 o'clock in the morning. Hey man, can I come by? You're trying to sleep. You don't want to deal with it. They show up. They're all antsy. They're all paranoid. They're looking out your windows. They're asking you all kinds of crazy questions. They start turning into paranoid schizophrenics. Not the type of people I want to do business with. But then you got like marijuana, and you can sell marijuana, and the people are kind of cool, and they're just like, hey, dude, what's up, man? That stuff was awesome that you sold to me last week. And then even in the marijuana market, you've got your ditch weed that you sell to you know, high school students who only want to pay $20 for an eighth, and then you've got your high-end kind buds that you sell to CEOs who are willing to pay $50 an eighth. Pick your clientele wisely. Who do you want to serve? Who do you want to work with? Who do you want to surround yourself with? And then make sure that your business is congruent with that. You don't want to sell to meth addicts. You probably, if you've got the choice between selling to Fortune 500 buyers and Walmart buyers, you're probably better off going for the Fortune 500 customers. Number six, take advantage of scarcity. Now, we were talking about supply and demand. Because of the way that government laws artificially influence the drug market, they create scarcity, but that scarcity creates an environment where the price of those drugs can just drastically be increased. If you have something that you're selling and you can either make it scarce because of a limited time offer, you can make it scarce because there's only so many, you can make it scarce because it's only sold to certain types of people. If you can add scarcity into your marketing of whatever it is that you're selling, you can charge a lot more for it. So just like in the drug world where supply and demand creates artificial scarcity, if you can create scarcity based off of what you're selling, you can charge more. So take advantage of scarcity. Number seven, and I said I was going to go back and contradict my earlier statements about intellectual property. I'm about to do that right now. Number seven is protect your brand. And when I say that, people will say, well, that's intellectual property. You can't own an idea, man. Well, here's the thing. If you don't protect your brand, if you don't make sure that other people aren't using your brand incorrectly, then you're going to have some problems on your hands. Going back to when, hypothetically, my brother and I were selling ecstasy pills, one of the most, there was two really popular ones. There was the Teletubby pills and there was the Mitsubishi pills. And the Mitsubishis, they were just pills that were pressed like a little Mitsubishi. They had a Mitsubishi logo on the pills, which is an example of Mitsubishi not doing a very good job of protecting their brand. But the Mitsubishis, the guys that were pressing up the Mitsubishis, they were some really good ecstasy. They were, everybody that bought one for $20 felt like they were getting a really good deal. And this went on for a couple of months. The guys that were pressing up the Mitsubishis were putting out some really good stuff. And then somebody got their hands on one of those presses and they started cutting their Molly, their MDMA with some garbage and started creating not so good pills that looked just like the Mitsubishi pills, but because they had gotten their hands on one of the presses, but were not as good as those Mitsubishi pills. And then the market got flooded with tainted Mitsubishi pills. And just like that, everybody stopped wanting to buy the Mitsubishis because they couldn't tell whether it was a good Mitsubishi or a bad Mitsubishi. And just like that, the people that were pressing those Mitsubishis originally, their brand went to crap and they could no longer charge the amount of money that they were getting because they didn't protect their brand. So if you sell pants, knockoff pants that look just like yours, but fall apart, going to hurt your brand. Whatever it is that you sell, if you don't protect your brand, if you aren't very meticulous about making sure that people see your brand the way that you want them to see it, that they see, that they associate the quality and you control who is able to use your brand and who is able to affect how people view your brand. If you don't do that, you're going to end up in a situation like those Mitsubishi producers found themselves in. So number seven, even though it's an IP, intellectual property issue, I wholeheartedly believe in protecting your brand. And that brings us to number eight, which is quality matters. So just like in that Mitsubishi story, when some lower quality knockoffs hit the market, the original Mitsubishis lost their market value. And if it's not knockoffs, if it's yours, if you have what they call incremental degradation, where you've got a candy that has 17 different ingredients and you take out two of those ingredients to cut corners and cut costs and nobody really notices. So then you take out two more ingredients and now your candy is down to, 13 ingredients and nobody really notices. And then you take out two more and now your candy is 11 ingredients and people start to notice it. The quality starts to go down. Your sales start to go down. So quality matters. If you're selling anything and you start cutting it with baking soda or with anything that degrades the quality, people are going to stop wanting to come to you to buy it. So that's something that happens in the drug game a lot. People cut their stuff, they make the quality go down, and then people stop buying it from them. Number nine, and this one should go without saying, but no risk, no reward. That's why the drug game is so profitable, because there's a lot of risk. You got to watch out for the cops. You got to watch out for rival drug dealers, rival gang members, people that are trying to rip you off. There's a lot of risk, but there's a lot of reward. And that's true of any business. The more risk you take, the more calculated risks you take, the better the reward. And number 10, you got to think big. You got to think like Scarface. You don't want to be the two-bit dealer on the corner. You want to be the guy living in the mansion in Miami, and you have to believe that you can actually get there. Whatever you believe about, whatever ambitions you set at the beginning, whatever limitations you put on yourself, whatever you believe is what you'll end up being able to achieve. So don't think of yourself as a two-bit drug dealer. Think of yourself as Scarface, minus getting shot to death.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
All right, Free Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Nathan Fraser Show. I realize it was a little bit controversial. It was just me having fun and being a little bit more honest than I probably should. But if you enjoyed it, if you enjoyed this fun little romp down memory lane, I've got lots of other great episodes over at NathanFraserShow.com. And of course, if you like this episode, however you're listening, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever it is, make sure you subscribe to the show. Go and leave some comments, rate and review the show. That helps get this great self-ownership, business ownership podcast into the ears and into the minds of like-minded people. If you want to help out the show, that's the best way that you can. Like, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, however it is that you're listening, and make sure that you're subscribed. Until next time, Free Market Squad, I am out of here. Be your own boss. #BYOBoss. Deuces.